Accession number 14975, William Rochester, reel 21.
Mr. Rochester, reel 21. What were the dates of the battle, Mr. Rochester?
Well, we got up there about the 23rd, I think it was, just settling in when they started shelling. And there was a bit of a scrap on the 24th. It's noted somewhere, I've read somewhere about it, that there was a battle starting on the 24th. Well, it didn't last very long. There was almost a little bit of noise going on and an odd shell dropping or a mortar bomb dropping. Mostly mortar bombs, I think, at the beginning, because they were coming more or less straight down at us, where the shells were coming at an angle. The only way we could tell by that was the way when it hit, once hit the ground, the shape when it hit the ground, you can tell roughly an angle that they're coming. And then on the 28th, the battle started on the 28th, really, really heavy stuff then. Then we lost a lot of casualties from them onwards. We lost a few wounded and all that. One or two were killed and a few wounded. I had a check every night, and I had a little red book. I should check them by platoons every night and put a K or a on them, or W, K or wounded, killed or wounded, you know, on them. So now that book was taken out of my little bag when I was in hospital. I got everything else back but my little book. Otherwise, I could have told you names and everything that was done, you know. And but that's when the battle started on the 24th, and it lasted through, apparently, to the 1st. It finished towards the 1st, and I got wounded on the 1st. And there was 30 left. My last call, last check, was 30 on there. And just out of memory, there was 10, 12 of the youngsters left. Quite a few of them had got wounded and they're back again. We had more wounded than killed. That was a good thing, you know.
How does a man react to his wounds? Obviously, the different reactions of different people.
Well, I didn't... There was none of them crying about it. None of them crying about it. One, indeed, shocked me because he came running after me saying, Sir, what the hell do I do with this? What do I do with this? I said, what is it? What's that? He said, touch my bloody arm. Can you see it? He had his arm blown up by around here somewhere. I'm not sure which one it was, but he had it in his arm. I don't know what I do with this. And I said, well, it took two of us to lie him down on the deck to bandage him because it was bleeding like mad. We put about three of those service dressings on, you know, the big lumps of pad you get, the little boxes of pad you get. But three of them on to stop the bleeding for him. He wouldn't plow with his arm, but I forced it out of his hand to get rid of it. You know, I mean, it was dead. It was finished then. It was too late to do anything. By the time he got back, it would have been worse. That was one.
How did you evacuate the wounded?
A truck, Carden Lloyd. We telephoned down that we had some casualties, and they sent a Carden Lloyd up with stretchers. And I came back on a stretcher. It was a track vehicle, anyhow, that's all I can remember. And I remember everybody had the name painted on the inside of the steel helmet. But while I was lying on the truck, there were still mortar shells, or some shells, coming over there. And I wanted my steel hat. I wanted my hat on my head, because I was lying on the top with the caddy. The stretcher was on the top, and I wanted my hat to put on. And they brought me hat. Well, The round hat like that, it had three holes in, three big spikes sticking out like that, where something had gone from the inside and come out over. And I'm saying, that's not my hat. I remember saying, that's not my hat, that's a bloody dead man's hat. That's a dead man's hat. And they turned it over and said, that's your name, saying, you're not dead. That's it. It must have been blown off my head, and the shrapnel had gone through in the air as it through from the inside. You know, three big spikes, well, there's three lots of spikes in the top. There's three pieces that went through my hat. After it come off my head, the way through.
What were the circumstances of you getting wounded?
what we were doing actually when it happened. I was just come back from my headquarters, actually. I'd been round the gang, down the hedgerow. I'd been over the outflank to have a look at them, say they're all right. They were okay. They'd have one or two injured, but they'd gone back. And I'd come back into the orchard, and I was coming up there towards the headquarters. I wasn't quite there. I was about 20, 30 yards away from them when there was a blast. And there was a lad with me as well, and there was a blast. A big bang and a flash, and all I do, I felt squished. I was being squashed to death. I remember my hands were like that, trying to push it away,
into your body,
into my body. I was being squashed into my body, and I was trying to push it all away, and when it eased up, my arm dropped down, and I wanted to get back to headquarters. So I got back to headquarters and sat down and picked the telephone up. My arm went down, so I grabbed it with this one, and that went down. Then I fell flat on my back. I couldn't feel anything. I had no pain. And it was lying on my back. Then I realised I'd been wounded. And I looked at my arm, and it was massive. It was about that big. It seemed terrific around here.
Swollen,
like that, about that big. And my battle dress was sticking up, and it was torn, and it was all wet. So I shouted the lad over, and I said, "Oh, look on here. Say, what's the matter here, will you?" And he went like that. I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Your vest's all right, sir." And that meant I was okay. And I said, "Thank goodness for that." Well, they just put a bandage on here, and they put a bandage on this one. That little thing caused more problems than it. I don't know.
It's your left wrist.
And that one, there's a little one there, and there's another one down there. And every now and then, it's a year since it happened, my hand used to feel like it was going to fall off. And I have a little piece of crepe bandage about that wide, about just that much. Wrap it around there tight about twice, and then tuck it in, and keep testing it every now and then, and put it back again, and it'll be all right. And you never knew when it was going to happen. It happened when I was at work once over. My hand just fell off. I felt I had to lift it up, but I couldn't lift it up. I had to lift it up myself. And I had to walk to the surgeon to get a bit of crepe bandage and put it on. She said, "What's this?"
Some affect the nerves.
It did. That's all.
So exactly what were your wounds?
It went through there.
That's your right wrist, right elbow.
And it come through there. There's another one there. And
there's another one. Top of your right arm and your right shoulder.
Down there. There's another one here.
Your breastwork.
There's two down here. And there's a big one in the middle of my back. You kind of see it. You can see it later on.
And this is all shrapnel.
Shrapnel. And this.
And your left wrist.
And that. And I saw an X-ray of this back hand. It's just like a piece of paper or something, with a needle. And you stick a needle like that. Little dots all over there. And they tell me that's metallic dust. That's what makes me hand. You'll feel that for years. It makes your hand fall.
You said your immediate reaction, you didn't feel anything at all.
No.
When you realised you had been wounded in quite a number of places, what was your reaction then?
I don't know if I had any reaction, because I didn't have any pain. I was at my headquarters, lying down at my headquarters. I couldn't move. I was lying at my headquarters. And one of the lads said, "It's all right, we've been on the phone, the truck's coming up for you." And they put me onto a stretcher. They brought put me on the stretcher, put me onto the top of the cardinal, and I went down to the first aid post. And I was propped up at the first aid post, sitting up with somebody's packs. I had two or three packs at the back, keep me back off the whatever I was leaning against. You see, my hands were down. These were bandaged up, the lads had bandaged them, and I was sitting waiting for somebody else. When my feet were out there, I looked down there and I saw a lump of metal. A blackened tin. Well, it was just like that. That's what I thought it was. It was sticking through there.
Through your left boot?
Through my left boot there, and it was stuck into the sole. And I shouted to the orderly, and he got hold of it, and he had to get a pair of pliers to pull it out. It was through. Now, I can't move my little toe. it caught the side of the little toe, and it stuck in the sole of my boot.
So how many wounds in total did you have?
Oh, I don't know. Two. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 11.
Are there wounds which
every soldier is frightened of getting, is afraid of. Is there some kind of wound that every soldier dreads?
I couldn't tell you.
I thought when you lifted your shirt up and your stomach was all right, that seemed to indicate, oh my, you know, that was a kind of wound a soldier dreads.
Well, because I couldn't feel anything, and knowingly I'd been squashed, and I could see my arm where they were. I thought, well, if that's gonna obviously going to cross here, if it's torn this, and I wanted to know if it had torn my stomach or not. But when he said, your vest's all right, that was all right. I think that's the only reason that I wanted to know, I wanted it up, because not having any pain anywhere, I wanted to know really how bad I was wounded. And that was it. Now, these two down here.
That's in the top of your legs there.
Just in my water bag. I couldn't have a pee for about 3 weeks. I was plugged up or something. I don't know. There's two down there. On the papers, I read some papers when I was down there. This one here is supposed to go in there and come out here.
Breast.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's another piece that's hit there and the same piece that's hit down there. Now, they're trying to tell me the same here, that this piece has gone in there and it's come out there, and they're not sure whether they've hurt the bladder or not. Well, I think that's not right either. I think it's two separate pieces that have gone down, you know. And
What did they do to you now? You're back on your stretcher at the... Is the RAP?
Uh-huh.
Which is the first place they take you to.
First place, the address.
What happened there?
I was out, I don't know.
Did they put you out? Or you'd flake
no
down?
Idea. No idea. I woke up in a big tent on a stretcher, standing on petrol tins, empty petrol tins. And there was quite a few of us there. And there was people on the other side of the tent as well. And apparently, for a number of days, I was all bandaged up. I had no idea what had happened or anything.
You didn't know where
no,
you were?
I didn't even know where I was. But I keep seeing a different person over there. A different person every time I come round. I was obviously coming round, looking round, and then going off again, you see? And because I'd seen a different person up there, I asked the sister, why is it different? Why aren't our bones being moved? Oh, you'll be moved, you're all right, you'll be moved. And one of the sisters came across and talked to me and said, lie yourself still, don't worry about anybody else coming. We're looking after you and keeping you still. Or words to that effect. Shut up and be quiet, you know, basically. And then one day I came round, and standing at the foot of the bed, there was the surgeon and a couple of sisters, or nurses, or whatever they were, I don't know. And he was in bare arms. He had a butcher's apron down, you know, these stripy aprons. And he was standing at the foot of his bed. Now, it flashed through my mind then, oh no, what's he going to do? I don't know. So he said something to me, and I answered back, and he said, will you, again? And he came round the side of the stretcher, and he went like that, to put his hands on the stretcher. He's leaning over to talk to me, and I blew it. I'd been doing that in the orchard when they were killed. I was saying, get in there and dig a hole about that big, just cover him over, take him away, cover him over. And of course, when he went like that, I thought, oh, no, you're not. I never repeated myself twice, apparently. I don't know what I said. But I know the next morning, the sister come in, and she said, "By, you're a real soldier, aren't you?" I said, "Me?" She said, "Yes, Sergeant Major, and you know all the words." I said, "Me? Oh, I don't at all." She said, "Well, you've done a very good job, because you're on the plane today." So she wouldn't tell me what I said to him.
And you never found out?
No, she wouldn't tell me. But I'd said something, and I'm not going to pop off, you know, I want to be home, or something like that. I thought he was measuring me for a hole. But I was on the plane the next day.
Had they done anything to you then? Did you have metal inside you had the operation?
Yes. Oh, yes, I was operated on, but I can't remember anything about that.
Had they got the metal out that was in and so forth?
Presumably. I've still got some in, presumably. But I moved from there to the plane, to a waiting space, to a departure where the planes flew off. And they brought a young lad next to me who'd lost his foot.
And now, he was fantastic to me. I couldn't do a damn thing. I couldn't move anything. And everything I wanted, he got for me. He was out in his stretcher, hopping around on one leg, getting me stoned. Did I smoke? Would I have a cigarette? I said, no, I don't. I don't want anything to smoke. I didn't want anything at all, but all I wanted to do was get in the plane and get home.
This wasn't a lad of your own unit?
No. I don't know who he was. I never got his name or anything. But he looked after me. He was with me all the time. And we landed at Swindon.
What kind of time had passed over? Have you any idea how long this had been?
7 days I was in France. I left, I got wounded on the first, and I landed the 7th or 8th, I'm not sure, into the Royal Hospital at Leicester. I'll be out, Leicester.
Very quickly, just to go back, because I should have asked this. You said there was a young fellow with you when you were hit. What happened to him?
He disappeared.
In the sense of being blown?
He lost, yeah.
Blown up?
He was blown. And the other one that was at the headquarters, or near the headquarters, or must have been coming towards us, he was my runner. And he has a slit from here, down here, so many hundred stitches in, but it didn't affect his leg. He had that one split, and
finger.
That affected him. He couldn't move his finger, and they wouldn't take it off. Every time we went to pick something up, that thing got in the road. He used to come through, and he said, look at this. I said, hey, Bill, man, look at that. He said, I cannot pick that up for that. They'll not take it off. I said, well, why don't you knock it off yourself? Oh, no, he said, I'll feel that.
This is, what was his name?
Ernie. That's all I can remember, Ernie.
So you arrived back and you went to the military hospital. How did they treat you there?
Oh, it was very good. The nurses, it was in Sister. They called the hospital, not the hospital, the section we were in, by the name of the sister, Oliver. I was in Oliver Ward and Sister Oliver was the woman. There was two of us segregated at the end of the ward. We had a thing round us and a one in between us. This lad was he'd come from Italy, he had a leg and an arm off, and they'd been done by nuns in Italy. And believe the arm, I didn't see the leg, but the arm, God, it was marvellous. It was cut off by somewhere around here.
The elbow,
somewhere round about the elbow here. And they must have slit the flesh up, you know, around. And lifted the flesh off, and then taken the arm off, and then the flesh was packed in just like wrapping a parcel. You know, when you parcel at the end of a box, you took a piece in, then up another piece. The flesh was in, tucked in like that, all over it. It was lovely. I mean, looking at it, it looked really good. Now he was in a real bad way, and I couldn't do anything. But I was packed up, had about 6 pillars at my back. Packing me up, off me back. I didn't know what was the matter with me back till way after I'd been in there a good bit. But I know it was sore if I leaned back, but not painful. Just if I leaned it on something or somebody touched it, it was sore. The funny part about the hospital or the wounds at all is that I didn't have any pain at all, any time. And I was told by the surgeon down there that nature takes after yourself. Nature takes after everybody that's a little bit too much, they're just cut off. And I've heard quite a number of people since then saying, I never felt it, Bill. Didn't even know I was wounded. Somebody told me I was bleeding. And it's true, perfectly true. Anyhow, I was in Leicester Royal, and they gave me penicillin. They gave it as an injection in this foot. And they put a cage over. We had, the two of us had our own cups and saucers and knives and forks and spoons. They were all labelled, sticky labels on with your names on, and nobody used them but us two. And they came up 2 or 3 times a day. And this was in plaster.
And I could. It's your right arm?
This was in plaster right up to here. And eventually I could move it, and it was stinking. You know, it got big at the top and got hitchy. And then they used to dress this one, just take it off and put another one. And that had a plaster on it to start with when I came. It missed them two fingers. It came down here and round my wrist, up to my wrist, and all this was fastened up in, went with plaster bandages and that, you know.
And this was your left wrist?
My left wrist, yes. And that was in hospital. I was in hospital a bit like that, both arms. And we were looked after smashing in there. The penicillin they were given on this time, it was very painful. It's not like the penicillin now. It's like everything else has been glorified now compared to what it was. It was pure stuff. They stuck it in. And when they pumped it in, God, the pain was terrific as it was getting into your foot, you know. And I happened to see my foot, it was just like a football. It was round, just like a football. Like I say, me toes, me big toe on the next one, sticking at the top. This and a big round of flesh.
This was the shrapnel injury? With the shrapnel
injury? No, with the stuff that was pumping. I had nothing wrong with this. Oh, just me little toe, but that was nothing. They were just pumping penicillin in.
That's just where they put it in?
Ah, they put it in on my foot, down here, somewhere on my foot and down here. And this, it swole all right up. And eventually they stopped doing it and put it in there and they stopped putting it on my thigh, and that hit the top of my thigh. And then they put it in a drip. I asked them if they would change it and put it into the drip for me, because actually getting it was painful. They came round. I mean, there must have been a lot of people complaining about the putting it in. It was the oil of stuff at the time. And when it first came out. And they put it in my drip. I had a drip, and they put the penicillin in there. Well, I didn't feel it going in after that.
Was this because of fear of infection and gangrene kind of thing?
Was that to help? Uh-huh. Yeah. I had gangrene, signs of it, with this.
With your right arm?
With my right arm. They got a doctor who was Sir somebody, who was a doctor in the First World War. And he saved me arm. They wanted to take it off. They told Tommy that they'll probably have to take my arm off. And she said, well, have you told Bill yet? She said, no, not yet. She said, well, you better tell him before you start. And then this doctor come in.
They came and told you that?
No, they didn't.
They didn't come?
No, they didn't come.
They never arrived?
No. But this surgeon came in, and they said he was going to do, he's introduced to me. I didn't know who he was like at the time. That he's going to do the operation and you'll be operated on tomorrow. And I went in. When I was in there, I remember him saying, I think we'll be able to save your arm. I remember him saying that. I thought, well, thank goodness. And he operated on me. And he said, he came back and saw me, I don't know, maybe 2 days afterwards. I couldn't tell you that I was very fortunate. He just caught the gangrene in time. Gangrene was just setting in, and he caught it in time.
This is quite a nasty wound in your arm there.
So it saved me. I was in there for a good bit.
What was the regime like? Was it a strict regime in the hospital?
Oh, yes, yes. But mine, they were good. Yeah, they looked after you very well. It was peculiar in there because there was a girl come in. Well, it was the wife of one of the lads that was in. He'd lost his foot. And she let everybody in the ward know that she didn't want them, not what to do with them at all. She said, I didn't want anybody who wants only 1 foot at all. She said, I only married you for your bloody money anyhow, and that, you know. And so the sister chucked her out. There was 2 or 3 like that came in. The lads were wounded. One had his arm was in plaster, but he didn't lose it or anything. It was a gash and that, you know. But, oh no, I didn't want anybody half a man or a quarter of a man or something. There's 3 or 4 of them, young lasses. Married soldiers, expect them getting killed so they can get a pension. That's what it was. It was dreadful. Then after being in a few weeks, there was a clear out because of the next invasion of casualties. And I was left in at the top of the ward, and then outside there was another little space where there was 4 beds, 2 at each side. Well, I was on the top here, and there were 4 regulars in there, you know, that had been in all the time, and I had to give a commentary on everything as they were coming in. And as they were coming in, I said, what's wrong with you? I've got a bad toenail. And Monty, you had to be fit. If there's anything wrong with you at all, if you stuck a needle in your finger and you started shouting, he shifted you. This fella had a bad toenail. No good to him. He had to get up, get away at home, get it done to him. That thing. There was half the ward with nothing wrong with him.
Just very minor injuries.
Minor injuries, minor so, but they were unfit for active service, and Monty got rid of them. He wanted rid of them. That was his instructions to get rid of them. And then I went from there, from Leicester Royal, to Market Bosworth, which is a healing place, you know, that you got all your operations and things like that. Well, an Irish nurse, I was pushed in there with a sergeant major, Thomas, another sergeant major, and she had come in, and this was a hole right through there, you see.
In your right arm?
In this one. There was a hole, you could go through. She used to have a pair of crocodile scissors. They were like clumps, you know. They had a big long nose like that. She would get some cotton wool, Vaseline cotton wool, and push it through there to the other end, or push it back that way. I always ask her to push it that way, because when it came this end, I used to get hold of it and play seesaw with it. I still couldn't feel anything, you know, and she, there was no pain at all. And she was pulling it back, and I was pulling it. Leave go of it, leave it. And we used to have some great fun. And then the other sergeant major, he was a real ladies' man. He started touching her and getting all of it and shouting at him at night time, "Can we have a cup of tea?" I said, "We're not allowed to. I'll sing you an Irish song." So she would sit down on the end of one of the beds and he would sing her an Irish song. She was straight out for a cup of tea. He didn't get anything on it. A cup of tea is no kind. Bartichoke, cup of tea through the night, you know. And then he left. And I was left as a senior warrant officer, senior soldier there, you know. The lads used to go out, and further across the hospital department, there was a room there for babies. And no mothers, just the babies were in there. And they used to let them out, and the lads used to go and play with them. And the funny part about it was, there was a couple of black kids, and those two kids would come down to our place, and they would run with their hands out like I was shouting, "Daddy, daddy, daddy," to him. He said, "If my wife comes here, she'll shoot me." It's not my kid. I don't know. They didn't know the way, you know. But they've been playing with them and carrying on with them. And I thought, there's a lot of lads, but they could walk around, you know, and they could move about. And I thought, well, they wanted something to do. So I got hold of one of the sisters and I said, "Can we use your nurses? Can we have a game of cricket with your nurses or the lads? A bit of fun." She said, "That's a good idea, Sergeant Major. I'll see if I can get some equipment." She got some bats, ball, and the wicket, and we had a cricket match with the invalids and the nurses. And the matron knew not about it. At least the sister said she told the matron, and I believe her. But when the matron came out, one of the lasses was bowling overarm. And she thought, that was not ladylike at all. Stop this game straight away. So she stopped the game. She had a bowl underarm. And we had tennis courts. We had tennis courts going. And Ina came down, and she was living with one of the nurses, mothers, just outside the hospital door. She was in every day. And then we had concerts. We put a concert on. We got two or three lads to help. We had a room with a stage. One of them, we had a big sheet across the stage and a light on. And one of the lads was operating. You can see the shadow. You see a body lying on the place, you know. You see them cutting, and then the person casually started screaming and shouting while he was cutting her open, and he was pulling all kinds out of her, you know, for a laugh and a carry on. And then that went down well. Then the other one was that we got a nurse, a volunteer nurse, and another lad behind the sheet, and they stripped each other on there, and the matron was sitting in the front. You should have seen her face. Do it. pulling the dress off and hang it on the top, you know. And then the lad would take his coat on, put that on the top. Then the shirt would come off. Then the trousers. Then the lasses were stripping down to lay nothing on, you see. And then when they had nothing on at all, and all that clothes were on the top there, we dropped the sheet. We dropped that down, and they were still standing fully dressed. The matron was all right there. We had some really good food in there. One dancer's gone, and I had a plaster on this leg, and I couldn't dance with the leg, so they put an iron round there, round the bottom, and it came out at the bottom, you know, my foot there. The iron come down the leg, and then went round like that. So I got the engineer down there to drill a hole in this piece, and put a little rubber heel from a lady's shoe on there with a nut and bolt. And I could swing on it. I could dance and turn on.
So your left foot had been injured somewhere, somehow.
Well, this the little toe.
No, I see. With the shrapnel on it.
They put in plaster. And I used to dance on it, swing around and dance. And we had a dance organised there. And we had parties coming in. They didn't want us to leave. I didn't know. We organised it all, you know. And everything we organised, the matron would produce so many packets of cigarettes free. They give us prizes. We had a good time in Market Buzzard, I tell you. It was very, very good. We were there when the planes and the went over for Arnhem. The sky was black. Beautiful Sunday morning, and all of a sudden it was night time. And we had a French nurse there. Gosh, she went mad. She was out in the square outside shouting, you know, Vive la France, Vive la France. We all knew the way they were going. It was very good.
The discipline in the hospital, was that military discipline?
No, I was a military. No, there was a sergeant there, but he was very good. Very good. We get what we wanted. We got a shop at the finish.